Hello, Fightful Faithful. Welcome to another episode of Sour Graps. I'm your host, Alex Pulowski, and everything sucks. You know, this fucking company, man, like, that's become my go-to phrase. It's become my go-to phrase. I tweet it out about this company all the time. This fucking company, man. And I don't mean Seth Rollins. I don't mean this fucking company, man. I mean this fucking company, man. I don't get it. That shooting themselves in the foot. It'd be one thing where it was like, you know, there's no competition anywhere. So let's kick them to the curb. What are they going to do? Go wrestle for Ring of Honor? Yeah, sure. Yeah, have fun. No, there's fucking competition everywhere now. And forbidden doors have been opened. Yeah. Kevin Steets in the chat. New Fightful t-shirt. This fucking company, man. Hey, you know what? Sure, let's do that. Get on it. I don't know who I'm even talking to. Get on that, Fightful graphics team. When Sean said there are going to be some releases and there are going to be some surprising names, I just let myself believe anything was possible. I mean, outside of like Roman, you know what I mean? And honestly, four of the names were not a surprise to me. Two of them super were. Because, I mean, just fucking look at him. Like he showed up as like Vince's wet dream come to life. He's 6'9" of man meat. I mean, it's perfect. And then they brought him up and he didn't have any fucking clue what to do. Because he was 6'9" of man meat. And they were like, just stand there and look intimidating. And he couldn't even do that right because of the way that they like framed his face. Braun, when he's got the giant, I'm talking about Braun, when he's got the giant, when he got all the hair that he had when he first debuted in the really big, bushy, wide beard, it made his face look like it was this big on a giant head. But then he shaved the sides and went down to the mohawk and then he went fully bald. Kept the big beard though, but it was more angular. Like he didn't look great when he took off that black sheep's mask. And he couldn't do anything in the ring. And but that used to be all you needed was just to be 6'9" of man meat. But that's it. But he said, no, I want to get better. And damned if he didn't get better. How long was he with the Wyatt family? Like a year? And then they split everybody up in the draft. They had him squash jobbers. He got better and better and better. They put him with that feud with Roman. And he was one of the most over guys in the company. And after he had that really great match with Roman in 2017 at Fastlane, I was like, I can't wait to see what they give to this guy to do at Mania. What did they give him to do? Nothing. Fucking nothing. That's what they gave him to do at Mania. Fucking nothing. The following year at Mania, he picked a child out of the crowd and had him be his tag team partner so they could become tag team champions for one night. And I'm like, what the fuck are you doing? What the fuck are you doing with this guy? He's one of a kind. He really, I mean, he was at the time. He was at the time. Like, he really, really was. He was just, he could destroy, like, you remember that thing where he pulled down a whole scaffolding with, like, a grappling hook? He pulled down all the, I mean, I know he didn't actually do it the same way I know he didn't actually flip over the ambulance or the semi-truck. I know he didn't actually do it, but they made you believe he did because they didn't even try to make you believe anybody else could do that. When you look at Braun, like, yeah, I believe he could probably flip over an ambulance. I mean, back when I was writing for Fightful, I did a thing where they were like, okay, so how much does an ambulance weigh? No, I don't think he could actually do that, though. But you had me for a second. You had me for a second. He should have been not a babyface and not a heel either, because people genuinely liked watching this thing. They genuinely liked watching it. They genuinely liked saying, like, wow, that guy's enormous. And he was fast and is deceptively athletic and super strong, obviously. But they liked watching him, but they didn't want to, like, root for him as an underdog. You know what they should have done with him? A fan favorite monster. A fan favorite badass. Just a guy who, like, when his music hit, you knew something was going to get fucked up. And he didn't, and you book him so that he doesn't fucking care. He doesn't care who he smashes up, whatever. Maybe he's got a couple of friends that he, like, takes under his wing occasionally or whatever, but that's it. Like, you don't make no heel face alignments. Just have him be a dude who, when he shows up, the crowd pops like mad. He smashes something, flips over a stage onto somebody, and then he walks away. You never even have to, like, put a major title on the guy. Just make him be a somebody that everybody loves. Give him a token run with the belt. And when you do, don't book him like you did when you gave him the belt last year, because that was fucking stupid. I saw all kinds of anti-Braun slander across the timeline. Not today, because people had fucking class today, but, like, in the past few months. Like, they didn't like that he was involved in the triple threat match at WrestleBack Mania Lash. People don't like Braun. Why? Because his Universal title reign was boring. Oh, I'm sorry. Was he in charge of writing that? Did somebody put him in charge of writing that and I didn't know about it? No, it wasn't his fault. Like, one of the biggest fucking rants I've ever, ever, ever done was about how Roman pulled out at the last minute of WrestleMania last year and said, no, I'm not doing it. I'm not doing it. COVID. I'm not doing it. So I'm just not going to do it. I'm not going to face Goldberg. I'm going to leave. And they were like, well, now what? Hey, how about we call Braun, who literally 20 hours from here on the road driving to Wisconsin. Let's have him come back and beat Goldberg and become champion. And they never bothered to mention why. Like, Roman said, I'm not doing it. They wouldn't tell you. Roman thought it was dangerous for his pre-existing condition. So I'm not going to do it, he said. So they were like, okay, we'll have Braun do it. And when we heard that was what's going to happen, Triple H had the nerve to be like, oh, don't worry, we'll explain it. And they never did. They had an opportunity to. They just said, tomorrow, Braun, they did it on SmackDown. They were like, tomorrow, Braun Strowman versus Goldberg. They never mentioned why. So right there, his fucking thing is off to nothing. Right there is off to nothing. I mean, they already fucked him over badly when they were like, Roman's got leukemia, so he can't keep the title, so we're going to put it, hold it in abeyance, and have Brock versus Braun Strowman at Sands of Time. And they apparently, according to writers who were on staff at the time, who've all left since because they got brains in their fucking skulls and they don't want to work for Vince McMahon, they said, we had a whole thing planned where Braun became champion, and we had the whole Raw written. And we were sitting at home because we didn't make the flight to Saudi Arabia because we're not fucking stupid. And we're sitting at home watching the thing, and they have Corbin attack Braun for no reason so that Brock can hit an F5 on him and become champion. And once you did that, like, who's going to take him seriously ever again? Like, ever again. But they made his universal title reign into bullshit. Like his first defense was against John Morrison and Miz in a handicap match, which was a fucking comedy feud. Remember when they bashed up his new car that he loved so much, and then they tried to drop slime on him, but they hit Caleb Braxton instead. I mean, and they had him be the champion through several months, the absolute doldrums of the COVID era, before the Thunderdome, when there was fucking nobody in that performance center. It was just him and a bunch of empty fucking seats. Nothing's gonna work for that guy in that situation. And they had him do the swamp match with Bray Wyatt, which was a terrible idea. And they had him lose the belt to Roman. Well, lose the belt to Bray, and Bray lost the belt to Roman, and then they shunted Braun over to Raw Underground, where he was actually getting over as a destroyer of worlds again. And then they had him feud with fucking Shane McMahon. They had him feud with Shane McMahon. Shane McMahon! Like, you don't put just anybody in that spot. You don't put just anybody in that spot. That's a coveted spot. I mean, fuck Shane McMahon, but like, that's a coveted spot on the roster. That's a major league match. He had a fucking he's got a cage match with Shane McMahon as the babyface. Hey, Braun, we're gonna make fun of how stupid you are in the lead-up to WrestleMania, but don't worry, we'll put you over. You're going to win the match versus Shane McMahon. It'll be a big thing. You're going to get a huge pop from the crowd, excuse me. And then you're going to talk about how you did it all for everybody who got bullied, because it's totally believable that you got bullied. But it's a major deal, and we're going to do that for you. We're going to make you look stupid, but don't worry. It's the heel saying it about you. Nobody's going to believe you're stupid, you know? And then 2 months later, we're going to release you. After Mania, we're going to put you right up back on the WWE title program versus Lashley and Drew. You're going to look great in that match. You're going to bump your fucking ass off and prove to all the doubters from a few years ago, this guy can really go. For a dude his size, he's fast. He's willing to sell and bump his ass off for guys who were smaller than him. Not hugely smaller than him, but smaller than him. And yeah, absolutely, sure. Good job. Way to go. Then we're going to take you off TV for 3 weeks, and then we're going to release you. This guy was a universal champion a year ago. He had a match versus Shane McMahon at WrestleMania and was put over big. WrestleMania this year, 2 months ago. Not even 2 months ago. Like 7 weeks ago. And last month, he was in a triple threat match for the WWE title. And they released him. This guy. This guy who they failed with time and time again and remained strong enough that you could put him believably in a triple threat match for the WWE title a month after he beat the boss's kid in a cage match at WrestleMania. You tried to murder this guy's career over and over again with your shitty booking. He came out on top and you still fucking released him. What are you doing?
That's okay, though. He was making $1 million a year. $1 million a year, guys. Like, Braun in 2019 realized his worth to the company, may have been looking out and saying, you know what? I'm hearing rumblings. There may be some more competition out there in the world. Maybe you don't want a guy like me to go off and make money for another company. Maybe you see my value. So maybe, just maybe, how about this? $1 million a year. And Vince is like, sure. This is in 2019. This is not 15 years ago. This is 2019. $1 million a year, which is sounds like a lot of money, but like there were people making a lot more than that 20 years ago. That wasn't his downside or whatever 20 years ago, but still. So he's cost the company too much at $1 million a year when they've just posted record profits. So this guy who was Universal Champion a year ago, less than a year ago, because he was Universal Champion up until August. Universal Champion less than a year ago was in a WWE title match last month. And 7 weeks ago at WrestleMania, defeated Shane McMahon in a marquee match in front of the live crowd and got a huge pop. $1 million a year. What am I going to say? Sorry, kid. Budget cuts. Now, Braun isn't perfect. Braun has said some shitty things about indie wrestlers. Some comments that came out when people were being released during COVID, the height of COVID. People who were some indie wrestlers who were like, I make all of my money that I make like from live events. Like, that's how I make money. But what am I going to do? Because anybody help me, you know, go do it to my GoFundMe so I can pay my rent. And Braun, because he is stupid. Let's be honest. Like, he doesn't think things through. Right. He says, well, maybe you should have planned differently. When I came to WWE, all I had was I lived in my car. I was driving a Kia Soul because when I wrote this joke, I wanted to think of the most ridiculous car for me to be driving. So I was driving a Kia Soul. I only had $75 to my name. When you drove to Florida, didn't you already have a job? You had already been signed. So you had $75 to your name and your own car. And you drove into Florida, you knowing you had been signed to work with WWE and knowing that a guy who is 6'9" and pushing 400 pounds and can lift a house. Knowing that guy. Knowing that guy, Vince McMahon, you'd probably wind up on his radar sooner or later. Maybe your experience, Braun, with the gifts God gave you, which is 6'9" of man meat, maybe you have a leg up on those people. I don't begrudge you for all the hard work you put in, dropping a bunch of extra weight, getting down to crazy low percentage of body fat, and getting way better in the ring than anybody ever thought you were going to. I don't begrudge you any of that. But at the same time, like, you don't have to shit all over everybody else who's maybe not in a position that you are. Also, he gave an interview where he said the day that he is released from WWE, he'll never wrestle again. He says, I told Vince, the day I take off my working boots for you is the last day I ever wrestle. Here he is, 37 years old. He made $1 million for 1 year. I think he's going to probably want to, like, wrestle again. And he should. He's good at it. But he's going to have a hard time making friends in a lot of the rosters he's going to, a lot of the locker rooms he's going to go visit, because a lot of them have the guys in it who were like, oh, fuck, COVID came and now I'm going to be homeless. And maybe saw a guy who's in a very privileged position in WWE talking shit about their lives on Twitter and Instagram. And perhaps he should have thought differently about that. Now, a lot can happen. He might have been set straight by some people backstage about why he shouldn't think that way. Perhaps. I don't know. Like, that's his bed. He made it. He's going to have to lie in it. But there's not a wrestling company in the world that wouldn't throw open their doors for Braun Strowman, for Adam Scheer, just because of who he is, because of what he is. Now, the other people in the locker room might be like, this is fucking bullshit. I don't want that guy here. But the people who run those companies are like, well, look at him. Too bad. You're going to get to feud with him, and you're going to make a lot of money doing that. You can go back. I think we'll, you know what, we'll probably find the clip and post it of me and Sean reacting in the moment on the night when I'm not finished with you became a household phrase, where he just destroyed Roman Reigns. Like, this was in the build up, was post Mania. So he had the feud with Roman in March, and then they had the Mania thing, and Roman did his Mania deal, and then Braun was like, no, let's keep wrestling more. And they put him on a gurney, and he flung the gurney off the fucking loading dock. It was so great. And Sean and I were just talking about it and cackling, because it was just some of the most fun we'd have covering wrestling. Raw hasn't been that good since. That's how great that moment was. We talked about it. Sean and I talked about it, how like Roman and Braun should have feuded together forever. That's how great that feud was, how perfect they were together. That, like, Roman could do whatever he wanted to Braun, and Braun would just keep coming at him. And no matter what Braun did to Roman, Roman kept getting up. It was a great, great feud. It was Wolverine versus Juggernaut. It was fucking great. We're like, those two guys got to induct each other into fucking Hall of Fame one day. Whoops! We were wrong. We didn't realize what WWE was going to do to him. Official beverage of Sour Graps is still lemonade. Gives me that sour power. Yeah. All right. I didn't mean to go off on the Braun tangent right away. I thought I would, like, you know, just do a little introduction, and then I do people in ascending order. But here's I'll talk about where they are, what happened to them, why it's mind boggling that Vince would release them, because the oh, well, Nick Khan is in charge now. Nick Khan wants it to be Marvel, so he's just trying to cut a few corners before they sell the whatever happens gets run by Vince. You know it, and I know it.
Santana Garrett is somebody who didn't get a lot of attention.
She didn't, she appeared in a couple of Royal Rumbles, I think, and maybe a couple of matches on Raw. Maybe. She did a couple of matches in NXT. I know she's in the Mae Young Classic. I didn't see enough of her to be like, oh, yeah, definitely. She's, I know, I think she's something. And I think she's something. I do. We got guys in the chat who think he's gonna get, who think Braun is gonna get signed by AEW, and then feud with Cody the Giant Killer Rhodes. You know what? Maybe. I could definitely see it. But in all honesty, I feel like Braun. Who knows where he's gonna go, what he's gonna do, when he's gonna wind up, but. Braun could walk through the doors of Impact and like they just throw the belt at him. Here, take it. Just because it would immediately make them something that they don't have guys like that. Impact's getting a lot better, but they don't have guys like that. Or here's the thing: New Japan still loves their giant gaijin, especially ones who can work like Braun. You know, go over there with a giant white guy and just smash people. But if he winds up in AEW, he's absolutely going to put over Cody Rhodes. Yeah. Santana Garrett, anyway. She was called up a long time ago. And then they didn't do anything with her. Like Vanessa Bourne, who was released a few weeks ago, right? Vanessa Bourne was called up a year ago, and then they didn't do anything with her. She's been hanging out in Arizona, I think is where she's from, and just hanging out. And then she was released out of the blue. I did a wonderful, delightful little shade-filled post on her social media about, you know, she was nice. She was complimentary until she was like, oh, there's one thing that I really wish I had gotten to do while I was in WWE. And I guess I won't be able to do that ever again. I really wanted to wrestle zombies, but I guess now I can't. I mean, who knows? There may be more cuts coming. There might just be, just keep cutting people. Why not? The bottom line is so important. Sorry, kid. Budget cuts. Santana Garrett was never given a shot to do anything. Did she ever have a character? Did anybody ever hear her speak? Did she just come out to like lose a couple things? Too bad. I from what I understand, she's very talented. Was never given a chance to show it. So, not a surprise that she was released. And it sucks for her, but I feel like if she is as talented as everybody believes her to be, then she could go somewhere. The Ring of Honor is trying to re-kickstart a women's division. Impact has been losing people. Tessa's gone. Taya Valkyrie is now Frankie Monet and elsewhere. Yeah. Santana Garrett's last match, according to Jehenna29 in the chat, was jobbing to Io in 2019. So there you go. Yeah, so if she winds up an Impact, that'd be good for AEW. Why not? I mean, like their women's division is booked really well, but they need undercard women. who then could like build themselves up. They've got a whole host of them that are working on Dark that they could bring up, I understand, but like they're not signed currently. They're just doing Dark matches, which is great. But sign a few of them, or let Santana Garrett get some work in on Dark or Elevation or Rampage or whatever the fuck. So that's Santana Garrett. It will come as no surprise to those of you who've watched me. Not a fan of Lana. Never been. Not since early in the partnership with her and Rusev. Before she got into her Dolph Ziggler phase. Before she started dating our man Riggler. Remember that where she was wearing like a jean skirt and a jean jacket? She had her hair all floofy ponytail, not like severe bun like she was going before, but like the early days of Rusev, where she, Lana, where she was like, you know, Rusev crush when she was Russian, like she was like, you know, working for Putin. She was doing some good work. And ever since that thing where they're like, well, let's break up her and Rusev as an act. Ever since then, it just hasn't worked for me. And they got them back together and it still didn't work. And then there was a weird thing where like, who remembers one night in Milwaukee when they broke up Aiden English from the trio because they had him try to seduce Lana in a hotel room, supposedly in Milwaukee. Poor man, I'm sure she's gonna sign with AEW if she signs anywhere. She doesn't need to do anything. That woman never has to take another bump in her life. She does like direct to digital movies. Wallace Koalas with the cold fish reference. Yes, Lana was a cold fish, and they brought out an actual fish for Rusev to throw at her. But she never has to wrestle again. And wouldn't that be great for everybody if we never had to see Lana wrestle ever again? Wouldn't that be nice? From what I understand, she's trying really hard to get better. And on Monday, 2 days ago, she was in a number one contendership match for all intents and purposes. Who's gonna get the next shot at Tamina and Natty and have a fantastic women's tag match? Who's it gonna be? It's Mandy and Dana versus Naomi and Lana. And so if Naomi and Lana had won that match, they'd be next in line for a tag match. A tag title match. So it's very possible that that they could have released the number one contender for that belt. But she's got a thriving social media presence. People are just going to pay her to like shill stuff on her Instagram. That's it. I mean, if she goes to AW, let's take a break. Take a break. She didn't need to go there now. Miro's doing his own stuff. Miro is better now than he's ever been. She doesn't need to go there. Miro in canon on AEW Dynamite has talked about, you do not want a woman around. She will ruin your fucking life. But he has said that on multiple occasions. So I don't want like his wife to show up and be like, oh, I was just kidding. Like, Lana was responsible for some of the most ridiculous fucking shit. I mean, the marriage to Bobby Lashley, just fucking kill me now. God damn it, that fucking thing. That whole angle was just painful. Utterly painful. It's so funny to me. Like, that whole thing was just an abomination to watch. All of it. The whole angle leading up to the wedding, post-wedding, all of it was a fucking abomination. And somehow, Miro is the best he's ever been in another company as their TV title holder. And Bobby Lashley is the current WWE champion. Somehow, both those guys got out of that thing unscathed. And so did Lana when she was like, hey, they're putting me through a table every week. Nia put me through a table again. It's the 15th time in 16th weeks. And then they had her be the sole survivor of the fucking Survivor Series match. Do you remember that shit? Would they pay it off? No. The closest thing they had to pay her off was have Nia do a leg drop on the apron and then say, "My hole." That was the closest thing we got to a payoff for months and months of Lana being put through table after table after table. We never got a resolution to the fact that Lana got kicked to the curb by Asuka when Lana got kayfabe injured by Shayna Baszler in the build-up to their TV title, to their TLC match. And then when Lana was healthy, did Asuka even talk to her again? Like once, maybe twice? Good riddance, though. Like I don't like watching Lana on Raw. Like I'm happy that she won't be on TV anymore because she was terrible at everything that she did. Because they told her, "Hey, can you be extra annoying?" And then she was, and then she could never shut it off. I'm not happy she got fired. I'm happy that I don't have to watch her anymore. And I know that she'll land on her feet wherever she goes because she's got other career paths. Not so necessarily, multiple paths anyway, with Ruby Riott, with Heidi Lovelace, who apparently could not be a more beloved figure backstage, but hey, that didn't save Billy Kay, so. I just don't get it, man. Ruby Riott was fantastic, has been fantastic, is great. The thing I loved about her when she was initially in NXT is they just let her be her with all the tattoos and the punk rock hair and the gear and everything and the way that she wrestled, and they just let her be her. She was a babyface through and through. And they wanted you to root for her because she was different, because she was true to herself. That was who she was. And they called her up when she wasn't particularly in the right spot. There was still so much more for her to do in NXT. I think if they had had her down there for a few more months, she may have been in line for a serious title program, if not a title victory. She was great, and she had a lot of momentum. And they called her up, along with Sarah Logan and Liv Morgan, who had nothing in common. That was now... Right now, as they release Ruby but keep Liv, they were working really great together as that tag team. They looked like they belonged as a team, but when they called them up, nobody had matching gear or anything. They had like matching gimmicks, like Sarah Logan's thing, where she ate wild animals. Like, wasn't that her gimmick? Sarah Logan's gimmick was like, "I eat wild animals. Shouldn't you eat more wild animals?" So they failed her right off the bat, making her a heel, when all we had really known of her was like a really nice person who fought hard to be herself and to be recognized and to not have to change who she was. So she was called up, given her own faction, which I guess is nice, but they said, "You're going to change who you are." Because who you are, apparently, according to everyone, is a really nice person. who is fierce in firstly loyal and a great friend and wants to be that kind of uplifting force in her friends' lives and in the fans' lives. And they said, fuck all that. You're a heel, a dirty heel who hates everybody and cheats all the time. Out of the fucking blue, it was one of the biggest character shifts that they've ever done in a call-up from NXT, because it was like that. Because the other thing was, she was locked in a feud at the time on NXT with Sony Deville. Who was at the time? Sony Deville. Yeah, Sony Deville. She was Daria Baronato for a while. I think she had, by that point, become Sony Deville. Sony Deville got called up, too, at the same time. They had already been called up, and then they had their final match on NXT, which was taped prior to their being called up, but aired after they were called up. And Sony Deville was a heel in NXT and a heel in the main roster-ish. She was the thing with Paige, Absolution. But Ruby was still mega babyface and super over as a babyface in NXT and had been called up and immediately repackages the heel. But then her final match where she wrestled super mega over babyface aired on NXT pre-taped days after she had already been called up and made to look like a super heel. Which kind of put a damper on that final match she had in NXT, which was a no-holds-barred match with Sonya Deville, which was a fucking great match. This is one of those things where the WWE, the main roster, they just don't coincide. They never really jive together. And so Ruby Riott, as the leader of a heel faction, they never really let her get over. They let her have some matches. And then she was hurt. She had like double shoulder surgery. And when she came back, she immediately, they were smashing laptops and catering. That's how they got over as heels. Got over as heels. Like, I think, didn't one time they like throw some donuts at somebody? Like, it was just ridiculous. Anyway, when she came back, she was a heel messing with Liv Morgan, and then they got back together. In the meantime, while she was gone, they released Sarah Logan. Like, bye-bye, Sarah Logan. Go be a mom. We'll see you later. So she came back, and it was just her and Liv. And Liv was trying to be like, I want to be myself now. I want to be who I am. That's why, for a while, I was stranded in a bathtub being sexy in a robe. And then I showed up, and I was Lana's lesbian lover for 5 minutes. And anyway, so she and Ruby were on the outs when Ruby came back, and then Ruby had a really great moment where she apologized to Liv and said, I want my friend back. And they wrestled to get Liv was like, okay, I'll give you a chance. And then they warmed up to each other. And by the time she was released, I don't know, what, 7-8 hours ago? By the time she was released, they looked like the most complete tag team and the biggest absolute true baby faces that WWE had. They had a really fun little program where like Billy Kay was trying to be a member of the Riott Squad, and that never really went anywhere because creative fucking sucks. Because Vince sucks. Billy Kay gone. Ruby Riott gone. Ruby Riott took the pinfall to Tamina's awful Superfly sploosh last Friday on SmackDown, last time we ever see her on TV. Liv Morgan's got to stay there, pick up the pieces by herself. Oh, maybe we're going to get a nice singles run from Liv. Yeah, how'd that work out the first time? Do you trust this company to do something right by Liv Morgan? Because I don't. Do I want her to have been fired? No. Do I wish that maybe like she and Ruby could go somewhere that would actually treat them with the amount of respect they deserve? Yes. Now they could go separately to different places. They go to the same place as singles, or they could go to some place as a tag team. Anywhere they want, anyone you want to put Liv and Ruby together, apart, as a tag team, as singles, whatever, as long as they're being treated with any kind of respect, which is more than they ever got from Vince fucking McMahon. So over as babyfaces. My thing was, literally last night on the post-NXT show, I got a question, a super chat, saying, who would you pick from the main roster to go, not go back down, to be called up to NXT, because NXT is so far and away the better show of the three. Who would you choose to be called up to NXT from Raw or SmackDown? A la Ember Moon and Finn Balor. My first thought was Riot Squad. Because they're really great. They never got a chance to really complete their arcs that they had going on in NXT. So going back there would be kind of like a hero's welcome. They'd have some bomb-ass matches with Ember and Shotzi and Indy and Candice and Raquel and Dakota. Hell, I'd love to watch a title match between Ruby Riott and Raquel Gonzalez. Never going to get it now, probably, but I'd love to see it. But they failed them. They failed Ruby Riott especially, but they failed both of them. And where does Ruby Riott go? Anywhere she fucking wants. Wherever she goes, she's immediately a locker room leader, a trusted veteran. Heidi Lovelace was a brilliant wrestler before she came to NXT. She's a brilliant wrestler now. If she can go, still go at all, because they haven't really let her take the chains off since she came back from the surgery. So now she's got a really great chance of going somewhere. Like, I would love to see Ruby Riott, the former Ruby Riott, Heidi Lovelace versus Deonna Purrazzo for the Impact Knockouts Championship. I'd love to see her. Oh my God, that's fucking money to be printed. Britt Baker, the evil dentist, versus Heidi Lovelace, punk rock mega babyface. Print your fucking money, Tony Khan. She'd be so perfect for a feud with Britt Baker. It would be so, so good. She'd be perfect for it. I am not worried about the former Ruby Riott, Heidi Lovelace, winding up somewhere and not being instantly over and a huge success. Not worried about it. She's going to be great. Funny thing about all this is we're talking about AEW signing everybody. Well, they obviously are not going to sign everybody, but they're going to sign some people. Like, Impact Slammiversary is just in time for, like, that the prior round of cuts, like the Samoa Joe round of cuts. So if Samoa Joe wanted to, like, sign a short-term deal with Impact and come back and just blow the doors off of everybody, he gets to do that if he wants to. And here's the thing. If WWE had waited 1 week, they would have entirely fucked over AEW All Out. Because AEW All Out is 95, 94 days from now, and they all have a 90-day compete clause from today. So you could see technically a whole bunch of people debuting at All Out in Chicago in September. You could, but you couldn't, at least not at that show, that big time show for one of the hallmark shows for AEW that everybody's going to want to watch and tune in and see who are the WWE names who debut on this show. But they wouldn't be able to do that if WWE had just been smart enough to wait a week. Stupid fucking idiots. Buddy Murphy is a special wrestler. And I genuinely think he's one of the, top 15 in the world right now. Just from all the fucking shit he can do, that man is so fast. He gets so much velocity on all of his shit. He had several matches over the past few years, which were just off the charts great, and they never did anything with him. The thing they did the most was like have him be a babyface in his early 30s who's fucking a 19-year-old. That was the best thing they did with him. And then that they just dropped like a fucking stone out of nowhere. They had the whole thing built up. God damn it. It was actually some of the best storytelling they've ever done. Isn't that shitty? Like, it wasn't even that great, but it's some of the best they've done in forever. Aleister Black and Buddy Murphy having these matches, and Buddy Murphy comes this close. We're going to talk about Aleister Black in great detail in a second, by the way. Aleister Black and Buddy Murphy have these amazing matches on Raw, and Buddy Murphy comes this close over and over again to proving that he's better than Aleister Black and can't get the job done. And finally, he's at a loss. He is so damaged psychically from losing to Aleister Black by that much again that he can't even bring himself to get up and exit ringside. He's just collapsed by the barricade. And the next match is Seth Rollins. I think it's Seth Rollins and AOP versus Kevin Owens, Samoa Joe, something like that. But Seth Rollins he realizes they're fucked. They're not gonna be able to do anything with this now. They're gonna lose. So he gets thrown out of the ring, and he lands next to Buddy, and he says, "Buddy, help us. Please, I need you. Help us, Buddy. Help us, Murphy. Please help us." And at his lowest point, a man who's lost all sense of direction, who doesn't even know who he is anymore, because what is he if he's not the best? He's got a guy telling him, Seth Rollins, fucking Seth freaking Rollins, telling him, "Come, be a part of my group." And Buddy Murphy in that moment joins Seth Rollins. It's like one of the best moments of like in episode storytelling that Raw has done in forever. It was so good. You could see Paul Heyman's fingerprints all over it. That's how good it was. And they had Murphy with Seth for months, always taking the pinfalls for Seth, whatever. He's the guy who puts out Aleister Black's eye because that's actually long-term storytelling because he's always hated Aleister Black. All this great shit. They finally get to a point where, it's time to break up Buddy Murphy from Seth Rollins. So we're going to have turn Buddy Murphy face. How are we going to do it? By having him fuck a 19-year-old? What? What? Why? What? Why is that the reason? Why does he fall in love with a child?
Yeah, I know she was 19 and therefore legal, but fuck that shit. That's creepy.
She's a fucking child. She had just graduated from high school. If your daughter had just turned 19 and she brought a 33-year-old guy home, you would sit her down and have a conversation with her. But no, it's and that's, listen, Rey Mysterio,
and Dominic Mysterio, future tag team champions, are like, very, very, I'm not so sure about this, Aaliyah. I'm not so sure about this. Are you sure it's long-term? Are you sure that he's in for the long haul? Yes, Daddy, I love him. We're in love. So he's able to get one over on Seth, send him packing to go and paternity leave. Then he has a mini feud with Baron Corbin, loses that feud-ish, and he's off TV for months. And when does he come back? How does he come back? He sidles up to Seth Rollins, who's come back from paternity leave, and he sidles up to him and says, "What can I do for you, my lord? What can I do for you, O wise master? Please, please accept me back into your good graces." They never, ever reference the fact that when we last saw him, he was dating Rey Mysterio's daughter. They never, ever reference that. Nor why did he leave as this babyface who had just gotten over by defeating the dastardly Seth Rollins, and then he comes back and he's a heel who wants to be friends with Seth Rollins again. How does that make any fucking sense? They never, ever, 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 ever addressed that. And now he's gone. Now they released him. Go back into the summer of 2018. Watch 205 live episodes. Buddy Murphy is out of this world good. The closest thing we got to see on the main roster was where he happened to be in the background of a shot where they were doing the whole, a forklift tried to murder Roman Reigns. Like, that was the closest thing we ever got to see of him being Buddy Murphy, real Buddy Murphy. Because he had that great match with Roman Reigns, pushed Roman Reigns to the limit. And then he had the same thing with Daniel Bryan. And then it fell by the wayside. You're saying, like, you go back far enough, he was tag champions with part of Blake and Murphy with Alexa Bliss. I talk about this when they released Blake. And then they broke them up, and Murphy was off TV forever. And he was just angling whenever he possibly could to find a way back onto TV, and they never would. And then finally he was like, "Let me get down to 205. Let me put me in this title tournament for the Cruiserweight Championship. Please, I'm begging you, let me wrestle. For God's sake, let me wrestle." And they did. And it was like he'd been dropped down from Mount Olympus. He was a fucking god in 205 Live. Jesus Christ, he was so good. Deserved that title run. Had great matches. When they basically dissolved 205 Live as an actual place where cruiserweights are champion and have championship matches, and where everybody's got pulled up to the roster, Mustafa Ali, Cedric Alexander, Drew Gulak, Buddy Murphy, he was forgotten on the main roster until they had that thing with Aleister Black, and then the thing with Seth Rollins, and then the thing with the Mysterios, and then nothing. So he's been released. And what a fucking error on the part of Vince McMahon. I mean, that guy could go, he's from Australia, right? So I genuinely think he's going to spend some serious time in New Japan, because what an easy flight from Tokyo right down to Australia, much easier than having to like jet all over the world and try and get back home occasionally to see your family. You know what I mean? I think he'd be great in New Japan. I think he would be great in New Japan. If he can get that weight back down, because I think he's put on some weight since then. If he could get weight back down, he could be the best of the Super Juniors. It'd be fun. He could make a run of their top title. He's that good. I mean, but the other thing, like he's the guy I think that actually could do the most good for himself and the most damage just to everybody by showing up in Ring of Honor. Like, imagine like that guy doing matches with Jonathan Gresham. Like, just imagine it.
Yeah, and if they ever bring PWG back, I want to see Buddy Murphy just wreck shit in a fucking warehouse in Reseda. Let's do it. Yeah, there you go. It's 220. The heavyweight one is 220. He's definitely under 220 now. So there you go. He's ready for it. So yeah, he can win the best super juniors like now. He's great. He's fucking great. So good. And here's the deal. Like he's basically like a carbon copy clone of all the stuff that like that Kenny Omega does, but in a no nonsense kind of way. Like if the thing that puts you off about Kenny Omega is just the fucking, he's just so full of himself about everything he does, like in the ring, like just, he's kind of an aloof prick at the best of times. I don't mind it. I think it actually works for his character, but if that's the thing that bothers you about Kenny Omega, Buddy Murphy does all the things Kenny Omega does, but he's not that. He's all business in the ring. So is there a possibility we get Kenny Omega versus Buddy Murphy? Yes, there's a possibility. I don't know when. I don't know how we're going to do that, but why not? Why the fuck not? Let's do that. If he shows up, like, he's one of those guys, if he shows up in AEW, can he just show up in AEW and then, like, Buddy Murphy shows up and goes, you, and you, I'll take those guys one a week for the next 5 to 6 weeks. And like those guys he could point to are like Rey Fénix, Lance Archer, Darby Allin, Kenny Omega, Pac, Eddie Kingston. Like you could pick, he has his pick of any of these fucking dudes in AEW and then like put him out there, give him 15 minutes and watch him fucking tear the roof off the place. He's so good. And that's where you know that WWE isn't a wrestling company. They're not a wrestling company. They don't care about wrestling. That's why they won't let their wrestlers be called wrestlers. They don't care about it. It's ancillary. It's a secondary thing. Vince McMahon says, we make movies. Part of the movie is the fight scene. But most of the movie is the bullshit. They're a bullshit company that also features wrestling occasionally. So in that kind of space, Buddy Murphy isn't going to be utilized properly. Was probably never going to be. The closest thing we had is that goddamn magical year of 2018 in 205 Live. Like, that is the one thing, like, I don't know, because the cock is shitty. It's a shitty cock. And it doesn't have all the things uploaded. At least it didn't the last time I went on there. If, for whatever reason, you've never seen the 205 Live title tournament leading up until WrestleMania that year, 2018, and then the whole spring and summer of 2018 into the fall of 2018. If you haven't seen that glorious run of episodes, it's some of the best stuff that WWE did in ring, like maybe ever. Like, as a just like, it's a whole thing that they did. Like there wasn't bad shit going on. It was all good shit. All of it. There were real, meaningful, character-driven feuds that had nothing to do with the Cruiserweight belt. It was just guys doing great TV feud work. And Buddy Murphy was there as a part of it. Some of the best shit, man. Man, that tag title, that 205 tournament, man, I get the shakes. It was so fucking good. And that whole summer, Mustafa Ali and Buddy Murphy had a match at the end of July. It was a no holds barred or freak fight or something. It was some of the damnedest shit I've ever seen in my fucking life. God, I still say it's one of the top five matches in WWE in the last decade. Let the guy go. Just get out. We don't need you anymore. Does this company doesn't fucking care about wrestling anymore? If they ever did, they don't anymore. And another way you know they don't care about wrestling anymore, and another way you know they don't care about storytelling anymore, is they fucking cut Aleister Black today. Who's one of the best in the world as a wrestler. And also just re-debuted 10 days ago. Like, you had done weeks of little vignettes that you paid some motherfucker to animate those fucking things. You said, get me somebody who does animation. And you animate this. Part of these vignettes you made were cartoons. That's not cheap. Like, that's a whole different thing. That's not like we set up a camera and we just shot this thing. We put some fog machines and some candles in a black room and shot Aleister Black reading from a storybook. It's different when you put fucking animation in it. You thought this shit out. And then you had him come back in the main event of a SmackDown Fatal 4-Way Intercontinental title match and attack one of the biggest fan favorite acts in the company. Big E is super over. Everybody loves Big E. You said, Aleister Black, you come back and you attack Big E for no reason. Out of the blue. So much intrigue. Where's Aleister Black been all this time? Why is he attacking Big E? Like, this, there's so many things that are available to tell this storyline. And 10 days later, you capitalize on that by fucking firing him. What are you doing? What are you doing after all that? What an amazing NXT run that guy had. Tommy End. His first match under the WWE umbrella was when he was still known as Tommy End and had a match versus Neville, now Pac, an exhibition match during the NXT UK tournament, I think. And it was fucking great. And that crowd lost their minds watching it. It was a great match. And then he goes to NXT and he's super enigmatic and he has that amazing fucking theme song, that amazing entrance where like the thing like lifts him up to stand there and he just walks down and that fat, great music. No man is ever truly good. No man is ever truly evil. Like, what a fucking great theme song and everything. And he had a great NXT title run. He had some really, really great matches. Like, I mean, it's shitty what happened, what that guy did. But that match he had with Velveteen Dream, it's like, it will go down in fucking NXT lore what that thing accomplished for both guys. I mean, Dream threw it all away. But was really great at the time. He had a really great title match. He had there was a thing that, like, I'll never ever forget it. They had a really cool idea for what they were gonna do. They had all of these Gargano versus Ciampa one-on-one matches during their big feud, and it became kind of a meme. We're always going to get Ciampa versus Gargano. It was a really great feud, and they usually had really good matches. But it became a thing where, like, it's always going to be just them versus each other, one-on-one, always going to do it. And then they had this great idea to, like, do it Gargano versus Ciampa versus Aleister Black, throwing that guy in as the third guy, the wild card. What that match could have been, who knows?
he got injured and they couldn't do it and they never did it. And I still wonder what that match would have been. And now we'll never see it. Like, I'm fairly confident we're never going to see that match. Not the way they would have built it up and not the way they would have done it in NXT. In front of that fucking crowd at a takeover? Nah, we're never going to see that match. There's an alternate timeline out there where that match happened and that match existed. And holy fuck, that was a great match. Yes, Marco, that is what the lyrics were. No man is ever truly good. No man is ever truly evil. And that, Aleister Black has said that the Aleister Black character is the devil with amnesia. He knows he's done something horrible, but he can't quite remember what it is, and that haunts him. Which is like the most badass shit I've ever heard. And he played that thing. Once you know that's what he was doing, like, he played that shit to a T. Like, it was perfect. What a great run he had in NXT. And then, like, he has said the most fun he's ever had was when he was tagging with Ricochet in that month where they got called up for no fucking reason. Vince was like, hey, give me everybody, Hunter. And they tried to give him Gargano and Ciampa, and then Gargano and Ciampa were like, I'm good. I don't need to do that. And then Aleister Black and Ricochet were like, well, we'll do it. And they were like, remember that weekend, that main weekend where they had a match at the Takeover versus the War Raiders for the NXT titles. And then they had the match at Mania for the Raw titles. And they never got either titles and they broke them up. So it was the most fun he's ever had teaming with Ricochet, doing all those great tag matches on the road all the time, working both NXT and Raw. And then they broke him up. And then they put him in a fucking broom closet. They put him in a fucking broom closet. And said, why don't you sit here for a while, and occasionally we'll have you look into a camera and say, pick a fight with me. And then there was a guy who did. Buddy Murphy picked a fight with him, and they had some fucking great matches. And then after he won that feud with Buddy Murphy, he went on to be like the protector of the Mysterios for no fucking reason. He was he got thrown off the roof of the Money in the Bank ladder match last year. You know, the top roof that then he fell 6 feet onto a lower secondary roof. Then he got his eye put out by Buddy Murphy. And when he came back, he didn't blame Buddy Murphy for it, the guy who put his eye out. And he didn't blame Seth Rollins, the guy who told Buddy Murphy to put out his eye. He blamed, for no reason, Kevin Owens, and turned heel on the main roster. When he was first on the main roster, he had an undefeated streak of like a year. Then they had him lose to Seth Rollins because they forgot he was undefeated. Like, a thing that, like, that I would have done, and I think I would have figured out a way to really fucking nail it, and it would have been so good, and it would have, in this alternate reality where I'm in charge of WWE, Aleister Black and The Fiend are two of the biggest stars in the company right now. Neither one of them has lost. Yet. And they had a big time match at WrestleMania, and neither one of them lost. And there's a lot of fucking great stuff you could have done with that. I had volumes written, a fantasy book and that shit. Because Aleister Black was so fucking special. And up until they ruined The Fiend was so fucking special. And they didn't do anything with either of them. And then they drafted Black to SmackDown. And they didn't do anything with him. And then, like, for 7 months... And then they had the vignettes, and then he showed up and he attacked Big E, and then the following week they decided, well, whoa, 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 we don't want to get this
we don't want to go, we don't want to get this feud off too fast. So Black E, we know you are here at SmackDown backstage. We're not going to do anything with your feud tonight. We're going to start it up next week. And next week is 2 days from now, and they've fired Black. So how do you think they're going to address the fact that 10 days ago, Big E lost that Intercontinental title Fatal 4-Way because Aleister Black showed up, gave him a spinning back heel kick, and then was fired from the company? How are you going to write that? How are you going to figure out how that's going to work? Not only did you fuck over Black, but you fucked over Big E, because the entire plan was for Big E to feud with Aleister Black going into the summer, and now what? Now what? And Aleister Black is on his wife, Thea Trinidad's Twitch, and he's talking about how they didn't tell me what the plans were. All I knew was I was going to be working Big E. That's because they didn't know what the plans were, Aleister. Now, all due respect to Aleister Black, who's great. And I have no idea. Certain people are going to be more bitter than others about being released. Some people are going to be like, fuck yeah, I'm going to go somewhere that appreciates me. Like in Buddy Murphy's farewell, he said, there's nothing worse than wanting to wrestle and being told you're not allowed to wrestle. So I think he's happy to be gone from a place who won't let him wrestle. But everybody has different thoughts about being let go and whatever. But Aleister Black, he went into a diatribe about wrestling journalism and the dirt sheets and whatever. And there's certainly some dirt sheets left over, but there are some good journalists out there. Sean Ross Sapp of Fightful Select being one of them. And he's just lumping them all together, pinning them with the same broad brush about how they're all full of shit and they don't know what they're talking about and they don't really know what's going on. And then they're talking to, like, what do they do? Who are they talking to? They're not talking to me. They're not talking to anybody who's actually in the room. Well, yeah. He says, they don't know. They don't know. I heard those other, that Vince isn't high on Aleister Black. No, it's not true. Not true. It couldn't be further from the truth. Well, how do you know, Aleister? How do you know who Vince is high on? I mean, I'll tell you how I know who he's high on. The guys are on TV. He's high on fucking Dominic. He's high on Reginald. He's high on the guys he puts on TV. Like, maybe Vince told you to your face. I love the way you do stuff, kid. We just don't have anything for you right now. But I really love your work. We're going to come up with something in the future. I like your ideas. Now's not a really great time, but we're definitely going to do something because I really liked what you do. And Vince lies all the time. Vince is a liar. He's a serial liar. He's a narcissist and a megalomaniac. He gaslights everybody. He's a serial fucking liar. So if he lies to your face, and then he tells somebody when you're not in the room, yeah, no, I don't have anything. I don't really see anything in that guy. And then that guy, or somebody else who's in the room, talks to a journalist, and then they get corroboration from several other sources that also heard Vince say this. I'm not saying that's what our particular reporting was. I'm saying that reporting was out there, and it's very possible that reporting was accurate because Vince can say things out loud about you that are not to your face. And that's what's being reported. Because Vince is a liar. And I understand absolutely why you would have to believe that when Vince tells you something to your face, that he's telling you the truth, because the alternative is just too horrible to believe. That you've signed away your life to this guy who doesn't fucking care about you at all. That this guy who is basically God, not only in WWE, but like in all of wrestling, basically. The most powerful man in all of wrestling history, basically, tells you to your face, I really like what you do, but right now we don't have room for you on the card. But keep coming back to me with those really good ideas, because I see something in it. It's a good shit, pal. It's really good shit, but it's not right now. You have to believe that, because it validates your choice to be in this company and working for this megalomaniacal fucking asshole. It validates all of that, and you need that to be true. I totally get it. I totally know why you feel like it must be true. When Vince tells me I am good, that must be true. But you are good. You're great. You're one of the best in the world. And Vince doesn't give a shit about you. Both those things can be true. It makes me so sad when I hear the people who get fired by Vince talking about, no, Vince is great. He's really great. Is that why he fired you? Is that why he never put you on TV for months? And then he had a whole thing it was apparently this Tales of the Dark Father thing. That all came from Aleister Black. That was all his idea. It was based on his life with his own father. Like, it was a whole thing. It was all like his idea. They were shaping the whole creative plan around his idea. And then they were like, not only are we going to pull the plug on that, but you fired. And you defend the people who pulled the plug on your idea, your brainchild, and then also said, hit the bricks, get the fuck out? You defend those people? Like, the kind of, Vince is a master manipulator. Like, he's convinced hundreds of people who work for him that he's just the greatest dude in the world. When we know, like, just by seeing the fucking hell that he hath wrought on people, that he's not a good dude at all. We can observe this with our own eyes. So when a guy who's as incredibly talented and obviously like a thoughtful and intelligent and good guy as Aleister Black is defending the treatment that he got and lashing out at websites who thoroughly source reports that they have gotten from people who've been like, it makes me sad. And hopefully wherever he goes, another guy who could show up in AEW tomorrow and like have his pick of the litter of anybody he wants to wrestle and just put on fucking bangers with anybody. He's a guy who could go work Europe for like a year and just tear everything down. Once COVID is all gone, of course. He could do New Japan. He could do Ring. Another guy who could do Ring of Honor and just fucking kill it. He could do wherever he goes. He's that good. He could do whatever he wants. I just don't want him to have any illusions about his time in WWE. Like, they fucked him over hard once he got to the main roster. And that's... not a good thing. It's not cool. All in all, I'm actually kind of the people who were let go were either A, not used properly at all, or will have their pick of anywhere else they want to go, where they can go, and if they put in the work, become big stars in their own right elsewhere and make a bunch of money for that company and for themselves. or a combination of both things. Both underutilized and future huge stars someplace else. Most of the people who were released today, that is true of. So it's not a bad thing for any of them, those people. They may feel like it is right now. But anytime you can get away from Vince, it's a good thing. Because also there's that means there's room for other people. Like whatever position on the card on Raw was occupied by Braun Strowman, slide Damian Priest into that spot. Or if Keith Lee is healthy, whenever he's healthy, slide him into that spot. Like get some new people in that area. Buddy Murphy was wasting away on the bench in SmackDown. So no big loss for SmackDown. I mean, could have been, but they weren't using him. And a great thing for Buddy Murphy to be able to go someplace else and be one of the best in the world. Aleister Black, like, that's the biggest one that doesn't make any fucking sense to me, is pulling him off TV right as he returned, like, in the middle. Like, we never even got to... There's no resolution to him kicking Big E in the face 10 days ago. 10 days ago, he emerged from the fog and kicked Big E in the face. And cost Big E the Intercontinental Championship, and we're never, ever, ever gonna find out why. Because I don't think Aleister Black knows why. I don't think they had given why a second thought. We'll figure it out as we have Aleister Black and Big E come to blows backstage every week. We'll figure it out and we'll have Aleister Black tell a really bad scripted promo about why he blames Big E for something. We'll never find out why. And now Big E is like, he's in purgatory. Like, I guess he just goes back and feuds with Apollo Crews some more or what? Like he can't move up the card right now. The card is what they're doing up at the top with Roman and the Usos. It like, that needs time to breathe before they can like introduce somebody else in there. But maybe a guy who could slide into that spot now vacated by Braun Strowman is Karrion Kross. Maybe Karrion Kross could lose to any of the other four guys in that match at TakeOver, and they drag Karrion Kross down into the hell of Raw, and you could have Karrion Kross versus Drew McIntyre. That's fine. Raw can't get any worse. So yeah, this is good. Get Cross the fuck out of my NXT so I don't have to watch him anymore. And then he could go up to Raw and have a top tier feud with Drew McIntyre, and he can bring his weird spooky wife, and they could do all the little entrances with their fog machines that they want to do. Fine, I don't care. Just figure out something else for that guy to do. Wallace Kowalski has the best fantasy booking that I've seen today. Karrion Kross versus Lily. The stupid doll. And with that, I think this little bonus episode of Sour Graps is over. Thank you, everybody. This is by far the most people I've ever had watching the show on Fightful Select at once. I hope everybody enjoyed me ranting about this shit. I'm this is a thing now. This is a thing WWE is going to do. If they can release Aleister Black just as he's making his comeback after he had just started a feud with one of the most over guys in the company, if they can release him, they can release anybody except for probably Roman Reigns. So who knows, man? Who fucking knows? I say it at the close of every show. And while there is, while there are brighter days on the horizon for everybody who got released today, the fact that they can do this, just completely shut down a promising new angle on their network show, out of the blue, the fact that they can do that, and the fact that they think they can get away with it, and the fact that they're right, because of all that, I do think it is now inevitable, inarguable, 100% true. Everything sucks.